And do you know how many people would probably, like, run away at the sight of dismembered legs?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 4-foot bong and a bag of wheat by your bed.
Tiddlywinks, the parlor game for nerds, is nearing extinction.
It's in my pod! It's in my pod!
I will find proof.
I'm very easily startled, Mr. Fingerman. I don't know which regulation body would regulate the penis ring that you were talking about earlier.
I'm ready to remain conscious as we record this show.
Hey, welcome to Knuckle Stuff. My name is Mark. It sure is dark in here, Frank. And that over there is Chris. Chris Fingston. How you doing, man? Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're not going to be on this episode. You're out gallivanting about with your wife, I believe, on your honeymoon. Not your honeymoon, but your your honeymoon. Jesse's going to be pissed. On an anniversary weekend, maybe a family weekend. So it is going to be solo. It's just me tonight, or this morning, or today, or wherever you are, wherever you're listening. So, yeah, I've already been told that this is going to be strange by Spencer. I was going for awesome, but, you know, hey, whatever we are able to pull off in a short amount of time, I guess. So, Chris, I can imagine not only am I waiting for you to come back, but I'm sure the listeners will probably be also very appreciative of your return, as my jokes are much funnier when there's somebody to laugh along with me, and you do a courtesy to me by laughing at my jokes. So, this week we're going to be talking about hypertension or high blood pressure. I guess I can probably stop saying we. Being as right now, it's just me and the dog sitting here, and I believe he's asleep. So, high blood pressure, hypertension. So, what is it? Chris? God, I have a hard time doing that, man. Hey, so blood pressure is the force of which the blood is pushed against the blood vessel walls. The heart pumps blood into the blood vessels, which carries the blood throughout the body. High blood pressure is called hypertension. It's dangerous because it makes the heart work harder to pump and contributes to hardening of the arteries, or atherosclerosis. This can contribute to stroke, kidney disease. We covered that in our renal episode, which does not include the liver. Hypertension makes it puts more stress on your kidneys, which causes them to deteriorate, which causes more hypertension, which causes more stress on your kidneys, and then all the way up to heart failure. So there's a principle called Starling's principle, and what this is basically, so that was my phone. Yes, Chris, I forgot to turn my phone off. See, without you here for me to kind of poke a little bit of fun at, it makes me lose my game too. So Chris should be back next week. We got to get together and record. It is currently December 30th. So, Happy New Year when this comes out. It's going to be coming out tomorrow, December 31st. So, an early Happy New Year to you all. So, heart failure is a Starling's principle. Basically, what this states is that the more you stretch something, the weaker it'll become. So, what happens with high blood pressure in the heart is that the right ventricle pushes blood through your lungs. Left ventricle pushes blood through the rest of your body. So the left ventricle is kind of the workhorse of the heart. So with high blood pressure, that has to work harder. Now, we usually think that working harder on a muscle is good for it, except this muscle is going 24 hours a day, and it never really gets a chance to repair itself. And if your heart is not going 24 hours a day, there's a bigger issue here, and you need to call 911 or have a loved one call 911 for you. So what happens is that the left ventricle decreases its ability to pump blood. So the same amount of blood is pumping into your lungs, but less is being pumped out. And what happens is that causes a back pressure, which will eventually lead to edema in your lower extremities, or the lowest point of your body, which is usually your feet. It can become a little more systemic. And then it's going to back up into the lungs, and that's when you really start getting into problems. So high blood pressure all the way around, very bad. It's common and dangerous condition. Having high blood pressure means the pressure of your blood and your blood vessels is higher than it should be. So you have two numbers in your blood pressure. Most people, you know, they hear 128 over 42 or 128 over 76 or 200 over 102. But what do those numbers mean? Well, the bottom number, measured in millimeters of mercury, which is just what they used whenever they started measuring blood pressures, they used mercury. The bottom number is the amount of pressure your heart has to overcome to push blood around your body. The top number is how much it's actually using. And so if your blood pressure is 128 over 78, that means it needs more than 78 millimeters of mercury to pump the blood, but it's using 128 millimeters of mercury to get everything pushed around. So with heart failure, you know, you're just not effectively pumping it. Short term, the higher the top number, the worse it is. You're going to have your heart working harder. Long term, the higher the bottom number is, the worse it is, because that's what's making your heart work hard. About 1 in 3 adults in the U.S. have high blood pressure, and that's about 75 million people, but only about half of those, or about 54% of those people, have their blood pressure under control. Also, these days, we're finding a lot more people are being diagnosed with high blood pressure when they're younger. this is, I mean, it's called the silent killer for a reason, because you really don't notice it until there's a problem, until you're having a stroke, until your renal system fails, until you start having fluid buildup in your lungs, everything like that. You know, one of the things that frustrates a lot of paramedics is you'll go and you'll take care of somebody, and they, you say, okay, well, do you have any medical problems? No. So why are you taking Atenolol and Lisinopril, which are both antihypertensives? And they're like, oh, well, yeah, I used to have high blood pressure, but I don't anymore because I take the medication. Yeah, that's not how that really works. You still have high blood pressure. It's just under control. Or the patient I went on who was having a stroke because he was fairly young, found out he had smoking high blood pressure and probably had for a while. I believe he said he went to the doctor because he had a severe headache. And so the doctor put him on some antihypertensives. Blood pressure came down. Great. Problem solved. Except that it's not solved. And yeah, so he came off the medication and his blood pressure went straight back up, and it rebounded all the way back up. And is a and yeah, he ended up having a stroke. So let's stay on those antihypertensives when at all possible. So in as many as 95% of high blood pressure cases in the United States, the underlying cause really can't be found. It's still quite the mystery as to what causes it. There are a number of external causes, but they don't really understand what's going on inside the body. And when they don't understand what's causing it, then they call that essential hypertension. When there is a direct cause for the blood pressure, you know, why it's gone up, this is called secondary hypertension. So among those causes would be kidney disease. We talked about that earlier. That's the highest ranked one. You can also have what's called pulmonary hypertension. It can be triggered by tumors, other abnormalities that cause the adrenal glands to excrete excess amounts of hormones. And these are all things that can be secondary hypertension that elevate your blood pressure. So what are some normal blood pressures? Well, they consider normal to be less than 120 over 80. I know that personally, if I hear a blood pressure of 120 over 80 on scene, I'm like, really? It's just you very rarely see a perfect number like that. The other fun thing to do is when you have somebody new, and so on our blood pressure cuffs, it's a gauge that goes down, and it's marked off in 2-point increments on even numbers. So 120, 122, 124, 126, stuff like that. On an automatic blood pressure cuff, yes, you can get an odd number. But generally, if somebody gives you, if you're taking an auscultated, which is listening through a stethoscope, or palpated, which is a way of taking it where you feel the radial pulse, which is down in your wrist, and you get an odd number on one of those, generally people look at you a little bit strange if you blurt that out. So, elevated blood pressure would be 120 to 129 out for the systolic number, and less than 80 for the diastolic. So high blood pressure would be 130 to 139 for the top number and 80 to 89 for the bottom number. That's stage one. Stage two would be 140 and above for the top number and 90 or above for the bottom number. And then at 180 on the upper number or 120 on the bottom number, that's called a hypertensive crisis. And I remember years ago, we would treat hypertensive crises in the field. Hypertensive crisi, I guess. We would use a medication called nifedipine, and it would bring the blood pressure down tremendously. We stopped doing that because they found that dropping blood pressures when you're in a hypertensive crisis, until you start seeing actual stroke-like symptoms, you can cause almost as much damage by dropping that blood pressure precipitously in the out-of-hospital setting. It's different in the hospital because they have more control over everything. Now, this was back in the 90s, and this was still all not new, but they were still trying to figure out exactly how much we wanted to balance this. In congestive heart failure, you also used to give what was called Lasix. We still give it, but we give it in much smaller doses. Back then, we were doubling a patient's daily dose. Whereas now, we give either 20 milligrams or 40 milligrams, depending on if they take the medication or not. So it's really something that they've, you know, you fine-tune over time, and it's getting much better. So while they're not, the exact causes are not known, there are several things that may play a role. Smoking absolutely drives your blood pressure up. Being overweight or obese. Lack of physical activity, you know, I mean, which if you get up and do more physical activity, hope that'll help, you know, with the obesity and the overweight thing. Too much salt in your diet. They found that patients who are naturally hypertensive tend to be very sensitive to salt. So having more salt than you just absolutely need to get through the day, and you do need a certain amount of salt. But, you know, having excessive amounts of salt every single day can actually keep your blood pressure up very high. Drinking too much chronically will also create some high blood pressure. Stress always drives it up. Just everything gets more tense. You get more adrenaline in your system. As you age, you know, there's that TMB. Severe cases of TMB can really cause your blood pressure to go up. TMB, if you don't know, is too many birthdays. Yes. Genetics and family history. If your family members have high blood pressure, you're probably going to have a problem with it also. The kidney disease we've talked about, the adrenal and thyroid disorders we've talked about, and then the last one is sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is where at night you actually stop breathing. Apnea is just lack of breathing. So what happens is that you generally, because of a restricted airway, the flesh in the back of your throat kind of blocks off your airway briefly. Your body tolerates that for a very short period of time. Then you, it all of a sudden goes into kind of a fight or flight mode where it startles you out of your sleep, even if you don't come fully awake. That motion there then causes you to start breathing again. What they've found is that when this happens, you have a sudden spike in blood pressure, a sudden spike in heart rate, and that can cause heart attacks. It can cause strokes. It can, you know, cause you to have high blood pressure. Plus, you're not getting effective sleep. And I believe we touched a little bit on this in our sleep episode, where we talk about how getting good sleep and quality sleep all night long is very important. Again, we don't know why, but it is very important. So, if your loved one seems to be having some sleep apnea, go get a sleep study done. I had a buddy do that, and he told me that the best night's sleep he'd had in 10 years was during the sleep study, until he got his CPAP. It's a little bit weird to get used to it. I wear a CPAP, and it's gotten to the point where really I can't go to sleep without my CPAP anymore. So I can, but I wake up with a headache and a sore throat and all that kind of stuff. So how do we control high blood pressure? A lot of different ways, a lot of different medications, but initially they're going to have you lose weight, cut down alcohol intake, stop smoking, get more exercise. Now, the human body is made to be challenged. So get out and challenge your body a little bit. I mean, don't like go run a marathon tomorrow unless you run marathons on a regular basis. But get up and go for a walk, you know. We have DVRs on our TVs. We can catch up, or we can Netflix, you know, catch up on a TV show with something that you really want to watch. That can be done. So there's no real reason, especially after dinner, go for a good walk. You know, you'll get out there, you'll hate it. I'm telling you right now, you'll hate it for like the first 2 or 3 weeks. You'll be like, no, I don't want you. Your dog and your family are dragging you out the door, but you will start to feel better. And the more you push yourself under a doctor's guidance, you know, the quicker you'll feel better, because your body, it wants to go do stuff. It's not built for sitting in front of a computer all day long. You know, if you can find a reason to get up from your computer every hour and walk for 5 minutes, you know, walk down to the printer a couple times and back, do a couple laps around your desk, around your cubicle. They also have in cubicle, treadmills now that slide under your desk. They don't go very fast, and you can stand there and you can walk while you're standing at your desk. So those are all things that they're going to want to have you change. But if those aren't working, if you're leading a healthy lifestyle otherwise, then they're going to go to medications. So some of the classes of medications are, there's diuretics, which make you pee, there's beta blockers, there's ACE inhibitors, angiotensin receptor blockers, there's calcium channel blockers, alpha blockers, alpha 2 receptor antagonists, combined alpha and beta blockers, central agonists, and there's also alpha 2 receptor agonists, peripheral peripheral begins with an A, inhibitors, and then vasodilators. Now we're going to go into some or most of these if we have some time. Just trying to figure out exactly what we're doing here. So the first class we're going to look at are going to be diuretics. So diuretics help get rid of excess sodium and water and help control your blood pressure. So one of the big ones you see out there is going to be hydrochlorothiazide, or HCTZ. If you're a medical professional, you're coming into the profession and you see hydrochlorothiazide, just write HCTZ, because everybody knows what it is. There's not too many things that use those combinations of letters. So they're going away from using abbreviations more now that we're doing computer charting. But that's one that even the computer wants to shorten up a little bit. So they can be used in combination with other therapies. Now, you may know that we're going to talk about Lasix here in a few minutes as one of the things that we're going to can be used. Hydrochlorothiazide is a little bit different. It actually causes you, it's not quite the diuretic, but it also has the antihypertensive capabilities. So it's kind of a combination between the two, but it's not uncommon to have hydrochlorothiazide combined with another medication. So these are the thiazide diuretics. There's chlorothiazide, there's hydrochlorothiazide, there's indapamide, metolazone. You know, they're going to be using those. So that's one of the form of diuretics. Another one is going to be potassium sparing diuretics. These are going to be your spironolactones, or your aldactone, which is the same thing. Your triamterene. So these are going to be the next one we're going to talk about is loop diuretics, which are furosemide or Lasix. There's also bumetanide or Bumex. Now what these do is they draw off potassium. So if you start taking high doses of Lasix or Bumex, you're going to have to take a supplemental potassium tablet also, because potassium and sodium are both essential in your muscles moving. So you don't want to take off too much, and you don't want to, you know, leave too much behind. It's kind of an interesting quandary for your doctor to play with. So your potassium sparing diuretics work differently than thiazides, obviously, but they don't draw off that potassium. I know spironolactone, and we're going to talk about this in a few minutes. Some of these medications have multiple uses. Aldactone, I believe, also was used in higher doses, much, much, much higher doses, for patients who were going, transgender. They're transgender. I gotta tell you, it's really throwing me off not having Chris here. Come back soon, buddy. It's suffering. So, then you have the combination diuretics, which would be the hydrochlorothiazide with the amiloride, or the hydrochlorothiazide with the spironolactone. And then the, just to throw a little bit of difference at you here, the triamterene and the hydrochlorothiazide. So, so they can decrease your body's natural supply of minerals such as potassium and sodium, which can cause leg cramps, being tired. Eating some high potassium foods can help out. If not, your doctor can put you on a potassium supplement every day. If I remember correctly, I took one for a short period of time. It's a big old horse pill. So, we're going to move on to beta blockers. So, beta blockers reduce the heart rate and the heart's workload and the heart's output of blood, which lowers your blood pressure. If you remember in some of the previous episodes we've talked about, the cardiovascular system, the cardiac system, your cardiovascular system is basically a pump. Three things affect that pump: size of the container, amount of fluid, and then the how much the actual pump is actually going to be pushing through the body. Those all affect your pressure. So the thiazides and the Lasix and stuff like that, the diuretics, they're going to get rid of fluid so that you have a lower blood pressure that way. The beta blockers, they slow your heart down, the workload of your heart, so you're affecting the pump in this one. Now, some of these are going to be like atenolol or metoprolol. Metoprolol may be used, and some of these may be used for more than one thing. We talked about that just a few minutes ago. A lot of times when patients go into atrial fibrillation, they'll be put on metoprolol as kind of a, initially it's just a rate inhibitor to keep the heart rate down in the atrial fibrillation while they look at other options. But sometimes patients go on it long term for the same thing if it seems to be working for them. So you have some combination beta blockers and diuretics. Hey, here you go, hydrochlorothiazide and bisoprolol will be used together to kind of get the dual effect. Beta blockers can cause insomnia. You can have cold hands and feet. You can have a slow heartbeat. Obviously, that's one of the things they're trying to do, is slow your heartbeat down. You can have almost like asthma-like symptoms. Here's a big one, impotence. Yeah, you start having impotence. Talk to your doctor about that one. And if you're taking insulin when you're diabetic, you have to be very closely monitored by your doctor, just because they can interact with each other. So the next one we're going to talk about are going to be ACE inhibitors. So there are angiotensin is a chemical that causes the arteries to become narrow. It's a vasoconstrictor. And so you're going to have ACE inhibitors, which are angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. And then you're going to have angiotensin receptor blockers we're going to talk about in just a few minutes. So they're affecting the same thing, but coming out from different ways. The ACE inhibitors, which is the angiotensin converting enzyme, they inhibit the body's ability to produce angiotensin. Less in your bloodstream, more your blood vessels relax and open up, again, making the container bigger, then causes your blood pressure to get lower. Some common ones in this family are going to be lisinopril. I see quinopril a lot. Acupril is the same thing. Altase, you see fairly often. Enalapril, which is Vasotec. Lotensin. These are all medications that are going to be prescribed by your doctor, which are ACE inhibitors. Now, you can get some skin rash with that. Some of these side effects, it just cracks me up sometimes. Not that because they're necessarily funny, it's just, how does that work? Loss of taste. Chronic dry or hacking cough. Women who are taking ACE inhibitors or angiotensin receptor blockers, ARBs, for high blood pressure should not become pregnant while on this class of drugs. If you're taking one of these two and you think you might be pregnant, contact your doctor ASAP. And by ASAP, I mean like now or tomorrow morning, depending on when you're listening to this. This can cause interactions with the baby and the mother. So, your angiotensin receptor blockers, what these do is they actually sit on the receptor in the brain or I'm sorry, they sit in the receptors for the angiotensin so that the angiotensin can't get to the receptor, thereby it can activate. And so this is kind of doing the same thing as the ACE inhibitors, just coming out from different directions. And these are going to be your Atacand, your Losartan, your Cozaar, your Diovan. We see those quite a bit. And they, like I said, they just relax the blood vessels. Now, this can cause dizziness. It can cause, especially if you're on these medications and you stand up very quickly, give you a head rush. And again, they should not be used during pregnancies. So that brings us to calcium channel blockers. This prevents calcium from entering the smooth muscle cells of the heart and arteries. When calcium enters these cells, it causes a stronger and harder contraction. So by decreasing the calcium, the heart contracts in not such a forceful manner. Calcium channel blockers relax and open up narrow blood vessels, reduce the heart rate, lower the blood pressure. Amlodipine, which is a Norvasc or Lotrel, Diltiazem, which is your Cardizem, which can also be used a lot of times to slow a heart rate down. You also have nifedipine, I mentioned that earlier, which is Adalat. They're still using it, but it works differently than the way we were using it pre-hospital. This is a daily dose that is more monitored. We were giving you the patients more would be considered a bolus, although we weren't giving it through an IV. So, yeah, under the monitoring of a doctor, it's a very effective medication. Side effects are palpitations, swollen ankles, constipation, that's what you need, a headache, and then again, some dizziness. Then you have the alpha blockers and the alpha 2 receptor agonists. These drugs reduce the artery's resistance, relaxing the muscle tone of the vascular walls. These are going to be your Cardura, your Minipress, and your terazosin hydrochloride. Your alpha 2 receptor antagonists are going to be methyldopa. It's pretty much the only one. This drug, it sits in the receptors again and blocks the alpha 2 drugs from getting in there. The alpha 2 are going to be your adrenaline producing portion of the involuntary nervous system. Methyldopa is considered the first line antihypertensive during pregnancy because adverse effects are infrequently for the pregnant woman or the developing fetus. So kind of a very specific use on that one, but where you need it, it comes in very, very handy. Then you have your combination alpha and beta blockers. A lot of times they're used in an IV drip for those patients that we were talking about earlier, the hypertensive crisis. They can be prescribed for outpatient high blood pressure of the patients at risk for heart failure. This is carvedilol. Labetalol is a very old one. It's been around forever. And again, you can have a drop in your blood pressure when you stand up. So you got to be very careful about how quickly you stand up or get out of bed or get out of your chair, especially if you're getting older. You're already going to have a delayed response in those changes. So when you're laying down, sitting up, or standing, those are called orthostatic hypertension or hypotension, depending on what's going on. It's easier for your heart to move blood around the body when you're laying down because it's not fighting gravity as much. Because everything's going sideways. Still fighting it some. So as you're laying down for a long period of time, if you go to sit up and your body can't react fast enough, either through a medication or through the fact that you're getting older or there's a genetic problem, what happens is your blood pressure drops off. What'll then happen is your heart rate will kick up to bring up your pressure. Till your vasculature can constrict, and then at that point your blood pressure comes up to normal, so you'll get a lightheaded feeling because you don't have enough blood going to your brain. If you go from laying down to standing, it can be even worse. So laying down to sitting is one, sitting to standing is another one. So please be careful if you find yourself getting a lot of these. Just take a second. If you're laying in bed, sit up on the edge of the bed, sit there for a few minutes or a minute or two, and just make sure everything's good, and then get up and start your day. So your central agonists, central agonists, help decrease the blood vessels, ability to tense up or contract. These are going to be your alpha methadopa, your catapress, your tenex, We don't necessarily, I don't necessarily see as many of these out there. So some of these are meant to be for specific patients. They're meant to be for patients with specific diseases, or they've just been unresponsive or non-responsive to other medications. So then you have your peripheral adrenergic inhibitors. These medications reduce blood pressure by blocking neurotransmitters in the brain. This blocks the smooth muscle from getting the message to constrict. And so these are basically blocking the messenger from the brain. These drugs are rarely used unless other medications just don't help. And I have heard of zero of these medications. So, Guanadrel could be a medication. Could be an elf from Middle Earth. You never know. But it's, you have Guanadrel, not to be confused with guanethidine monosulfate. Yeah, these two haven't talked in years. Oh, I do like my Lord of the Rings, so. Then you have some blood vessel dilators, vasodilators. So these cause the muscles of the walls of the blood vessel, especially the arterioles, which are the very small arteries, to relax, allowing the vessel to dilate or widen. Wow. Oh, so remember earlier we were talking about how some medications can be used for more than one thing. Metoprolol you can use to slow a heart rate down. Carvedilol can be the same way. They also use it for antihypertensive. So in your vasodilator category, you have minoxidil. For when used as a antihypertensive, it's called Lonatin. What's the side effect of minoxidil? Oh, that's it, right? Excessive hair growth. So where do you think that the company who came up with minoxidil has made most of its money? That's right, Rogaine. So, yeah, a lot of times medications will have many, many uses, and you just never know exactly what's going to be, you know, the best use of the medication, or the one that's going to make you the most money. Also, another one that falls into the category that's used primarily for a secondary reason would be Viagra. Viagra was really developed as a powerful antihypertensive. It also had a side effect that they found they were going to make much more money on. So this is why if you're taking an erectile dysfunction medication, you won't be prescribed medication, or if you're in a situation where medical professionals are going to be giving you nitroglycerin either under your tongue, through an IV drip, or there's a thing called nitro paste, which is exactly like it sounds. It looks like toothpaste. They measure out a section of it, stick it on your skin, and it gives you nitroglycerin over a longer period of time. They have to be very careful when giving this to you if you've taken an erectile dysfunction medication within the last 24 hours, because they can't potentiate each other, thereby causing a precipitous drop in your blood pressure. So I had a patient one time who, it was, let's see, what time was it? It was midnight. Called us for chest pain. We show up, starting our assessment, talk about giving him some nitro, ask him if he's on any erectile dysfunction medications, and he says, yes, I took a Viagra 18 hours ago. So our protocol at that point was, if they've taken within the last 24 hours, to contact online medical control, which is when you call, for those of you older people listening, if you're out there, that would be Rampart from Emergency 51. For those younger ones of you, go watch Emergency. So, and you'll see what we're talking about. But basically, we call either on a phone or on a radio, and we speak to a live doctor in an emergency room. These days, we have what's called Medical Resource Hospital up here, and it's a centralized online medical control. Back then, we called the receiving facility. And we spoke to an ER doc, and we could get orders and discuss things with them and just find, you know, the best path. So the doctor comes on and he's like, and I tell him what's going on. I'm telling him, you know, it's been 18 hours, and he goes, yeah, it should be fine. Give me just a second. I'm going to just talk to a couple other docs that are standing right here just to make sure I'm not wrong. Comes back after a couple minutes, says, yes, it should be fine. Go ahead. Okay. We start an IV on this patient. We give him a nitro, and almost immediately he starts trying to pass out. I asked him, I said, you know, sir, can you, because his head's doing a head bob thing. Sir, yeah. Can you move over to our gurney? Yeah. Sir, yeah. can you move over to our gurney? Yeah. Okay, grab his legs. So we pick him up, and he was a decent-sized dude, so we get him onto our gurney, get him laying down flat, get his feet up, start running in. You know, my I had a paramedic intern with me there, so my partner and I are moving the patient. Our intern is spiking an IV line. We started running in fluid through our IV, and we got out of there. As soon as we get him on the gurney, he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, we need to get you on the gurney. I told you I'd move. Yeah, but you told me three times and you didn't move. Oh. So we ran in about a liter of fluid. We got on the radio. We spoke to the doc again. Ran in about a liter of fluid to this guy. And we did not get another blood pressure. His initial blood pressure for us when we got on scene was like 150 over like 78, something like that. And we did not get another blood pressure until we were pulling into the ER. We went in lights and sirens, middle of the night. We made really good time. And the first blood pressure we got was as we were pulling in, and it was 82 over like 30. So, yeah, you've got to be very, very careful with these. You have a lot of drug interactions. The best person to catch drug interactions is have your pharmacist. Say, hey, can you do a drug interaction check for me, please? A lot of times they do it anyway. But if you ask them specifically, especially if you're going on a brand new medication, your pharmacist should then contact your primary care physician or the doctor who prescribed it and talk to them and say, look, you know, these could happen to you. Do you understand it? You know, I want to make sure you know about these things. And the doctor may be like, yeah, I know, but, you know, these are my reasons, or, you know, yes, it's all good. I think we'll be fine. They may give you specific instructions, but the pharmacists are really truly the professionals that know the most. I mean, it's part of their job, you know. If you find yourself seeing a couple of different doctors for different problems and you start having some, you know, everybody's putting you on different medications and you start seeing a large number of medications being on your list, it doesn't hurt to have your primary care physician go through your list and make sure that they're not prescribing medications for side effects of other medications, which can happen. Oh, well, I'm having this now. Okay, well, let's give you this medication. Say one of your hypertensive medications is giving you impotence. Well, maybe you don't need Viagra. Maybe you need a different antihypertensive medication or a lower dose or something along those lines. You know, I remember the big one when I started were MAOI, good Lord. One that was going on when I started were MAO inhibitors or MAOIs. This is monoamine oxidase inhibiting enzyme. And it was treated for, it was like, they were the first class of antidepressants way back when. Problem is, they interacted very negatively with just about everything. So they did a good job for the time of helping treat depression and anxiety and stuff like that. But the problem was is that they interacted with everything under the sun, especially antihypertensives. But yeah, you had to be very careful back in the day of giving somebody anything that if they were taking an MAOI. And, you know, so, I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask. I'm not saying that your doctor, I mean, I take two medications, which the pharmacist talked to me about, you know, hey, you never realize these two can interact with each other and it can be a little bit negative. I'm like, yeah, I know, I spoke with my doctor and we've talked about it. So, I mean, it's a lot of times it's a precautionary sort of thing. If you start seeing symptoms, contact your doctor. You know, but it doesn't mean you can't use them together. It just means that they need to be careful. You need to be monitored until you see if there's any potential interactions between them. Because you may take them and be just fine. You know, and that's why you always do this under the care of a medical professional. If you're getting like a lot of those medications I was talking about, talk to your pharmacist. See if they're interacting with each other. You know, see if you're getting those. I ran a lady one time. She was on 46 different medications from these two different doctors. ER doc was pissed. I brought the bag in with me because I just couldn't write them all down. And I sat down at the ER at a desk, went through this huge bag of medications. And on top of having 46 medications, somebody had put her on a lot of medications were 90-day prescriptions. And so some pharmacies, what they'll do, especially online pharmacies, is they will just automatically every 90 days send you another batch, whether you need them or not. And they bill your insurance and they get paid and everything like that. So she had tons and tons and tons of medications in that bag. So I had a feeling that some primary care physicians or some other doctors were going to get kind of a phone call from this ER doc saying, what the hell? So, thank you for listening. Chris should be back next week. I don't see why he wouldn't be. We miss you, Chris. And if the sound quality is a little bit off the last couple weeks, I own that completely. I'm not using the same setup that we have when we're at Chris's house. I'm using the original microphones that we used. Last week's episode, I know, sounded really rough, and I do apologize for that. Chris is usually the tech guy who sets all that up and figures out the balances and makes everything sound good during the recording. I did not have the skill at that point to do it properly. I'm not saying I have it now. I think this one's going to come out a little bit better. But there was a lot of we were speaking way too loud for the situation. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you enjoy every episode. If you have any questions for us, concerns, complaints, kvetches, please contact us on social media. We're on Twitter at Twitter at Medside Stuff, MedsideStuff. We're on Facebook at Medical Stuff. We're on Instagram at MedicalStuff52. You can get a hold of us at MedsideStuff@yahoo.com. That's MedsideStuff. We will talk to you next week. Have a great New Year's. Be safe. Don't drink and drive. All that kind of fun stuff. And until later, toast. Yeah, see, it's just not the same without Chris.